Hello, everyone. Welcome to Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guest today credits a message from the great beyond for delivering his greatest musical legacy. He was mourning the loss of his mother to cancer when she appeared to him in a dream one night and presented a celestial image of hope and comfort in the form of a song. The result was Drops of Jupiter, the soaring, inspirational piano epic that became an instant classic upon its release in 2001. It went on to win a Grammy that year for Best Rock Song, and 2 decades later, it's still going strong. It's since gone platinum 6 times over. In honor of the song's 20th anniversary this year, the album of the same name is being reissued with extra bonus tracks, and will also be made available on vinyl for the very first time. I'm so happy to welcome the lead singer of Train, Pat Monahan.
Yeah, it's good to speak to you too, Jordan.
First of all, how you doing? I know the last, year has been tough on all of us. How have you been feeling? Have you been holding up?
Well, it's been a wave of emotions, Jordan. It started with disbelief, moved into anger, transferred into sadness, drank a whole lot of wine. Lot of wine. got obsessed with getting better at golf. So that turned back to anger then. Now I'm back to anger. And in the last month, I finally found, for me, there's always a song that isn't always the big song, but it's the defining song on an album. And I finally wrote that defining song, so now I know what the album is. So now, for the last 3 weeks, I've been really encouraged, and it just happens to be at the same time that, you know, herd immunity seems to be working and vaccines are happening. So it's just a very timely, it just seems like it's the perfect time that all of this is working out. Plus the weather's getting better. So I'm finally in a good place.
Oh, that is wonderful to hear. I mean, definitely feels like there's light at the end of the tunnel. Was the song inspired by that? By that feeling of sort of like spring is here, things are opening up, there's hope?
No, not at all. I have a golf buddy, and his name is Sidney Rice, and he's a former Seattle Seahawk. And when we go out and golf, even though, and please don't tell anyone at my golf course, we're not allowed to be playing music out there, but Sidney, he doesn't really care, because he's a big, strong guy, and if somebody's going to tell him to turn his music off, he'll be like, are you sure? And they'll be like, no, not really, we're fine. So he actually is about 30, I think he's 34, 33, 34. He's always turning me on to new music, which, you know, you would think would be the other way around. And so I just was so inspired by these young guys doing such cool throwback music that I was like, oh my God, I think I know how to do that. And so this is going to be a very different Train album, and it's all inspired by a friend of mine on the golf course.
That's awesome. What kind of stuff is he playing for you?
Well, I found this Seattle band called The Dip, and I just think they are the shit. And there's a lot of other bands that he's turned me on to. There's Duran Jones, that band is nuts so good. Like, I can't believe how good all those guys in the band can sing. So it's just I'm finding music like this, and it's like a new inspiration because I've been listening to hip-hop for 3 straight years, and so this is a nice transition.
Have you, earlier in the year, have you been feeling productive musically? Or because that's what I always tell all my friends and everybody I talk to, say half the people are super motivated. They get up, they're making banana bread, they're doing this, they're doing that. And then the other half of the time, they're thinking, okay, I got my pants on. This is a good day. Like, that's my achievement for the day. Were you feeling earlier in the year, were you feeling really motivated to make music? Or was that back and forth?
Yeah, this has not been a very encouraging or creative time for me. I've had to like really work through those times. But, you know, when you are kind of an overprivileged white guy in the music business, it's hard to find someone that you can complain to, you know, like, so I just try to just keep quiet about it and wait for the shift, you know, and the shift came. And so now I can talk about the prior sadness instead of poor me, you should feel for me. It's more like, hey, I'm back.
Well, that is good to hear. We can't wait to hear more from you. We are here to talk today about the 20th anniversary, that's hard to believe, of Drops of Jupiter.
No, I'm not. I just wanted to tell you about that. I'm out now.
If you got more golf stories, I'm happy to hear those too.
All right, I'm just kidding.
I'm more of a bowler myself, but... incredible song. That song means so much to so many people. Has the meaning of the song changed for you over the last two decades?
Well, I mean, you know, like all music, I think that at first it's for you, for the writer. And then soon after that, it's not for you anymore. It's not, that song's not for me. It was a really important part of my healing because I had lost my mother and we were desperate for any kind of song that was going to make a connection just so we could keep making albums. You know, it's like at a time where it cost a lot of money to make an album and the only way someone was going to support that, that habit, as you would say, was to keep making music that was compelling to others. And we just didn't have the goods on that album. And it was a very, very frustrating time. So when Drops of Jupiter was written, it was very quick. It was from a dream. It was just basically my mom saying, this is what it's like after life. Then the song was recorded and put on the radio, and then it wasn't for me anymore. It was for other people.
Said it came to you in a dream. It's funny, often that happens. You have Keith Richards dreaming the Satisfaction riff. You have Paul McCartney, not only dreaming yesterday, but also his mother came to him, and that's where Let It Be came from. Did the words and the music come together, or was it just a snippet of a phrase of music, or just a snippet of the lyrics, or was it all there in your hand?
It was just all there. It was all vocal melody and lyric, and then the next day, you know, putting a very primal piano to the melody.
That is amazing. It's funny how vivid those dreams are with your late parents. Full disclosure, I lost my mother to cancer about maybe 6 months before Drops of Jupiter came out. And when it did came out, it obviously has a very special place for me for that reason that we share. It's very interesting how those dreams, because I dream a lot. I never remember them, but I always remember those but only handful of times. Did she ever come back to you in a dream?
No, it never reoccurred. Yeah, it was a really, really strange time for me. To think about it now and to think about that one time was definitely, didn't seem very coincidental. You know, it seemed very, like my wife asked me the other day, she said, what do you think happens to us after this? And I was like, well, this is not a 5 minute while I'm in the shower conversation, but if you'd like to know. And so we started to really talk about it. And I think Drops of Jupiter actually gave me some type of faith that maybe it's not just a dark hole in the ground that's the end. Maybe there's just a waiting pattern afterwards that we get to help others. I don't really know the answer to all of it, but I know that she definitely made a big enough impression either in the time that she was with me or afterwards that was a real moment.
There was an interview you gave, I think fairly recently, where you were saying the song is as much about your mother as it is about you and you growing and changing. What has the song taught you?
I don't know. I guess the word faith again. You know, some people have religion or God, and some people have, sports. And I guess for me, it's music. You know, that music has given me faith. And something happened to me about a month ago where I was pretty down. I mean, about a month ago, right before everything kind of kicked into gear, I was like pretty much feeling really bad for myself for super, super dumb reasons. No one would ever relate in a way that they should relate. And so I was kind of, you know, complaining to a friend about having hurt feelings and, you know, and things like that. And it was among other friends, too. There were three other guys. And I was explaining to them, like, the feelings that I was going through, and I had been hurt by people. And what they said to me as a response made me remember that I have to just have faith. Like, the universe knows what you need somehow. And I just needed to just believe in my friendships and believe in the things that matter the most to me. And they reminded me that I was being a knucklehead. And it was really important for me. And so music does that for me. Like when I hear, like, that's why I listen to hip hop so much. And now this new version of, or new, cycle of music that I've been listening to, because it's kind of young people's stories to remind me that guys my age should sometimes just shut up and listen, you know. Like, we think that the old cat should be heard most, but sometimes not so much.
Was there somebody when you first started out listening to music that really made you think, okay, this is what I want to do? I want to share my voice as well.
Well, I was the last of seven kids, and my dad listened to a lot of jazz records. And my brothers would be, you know, using their Beatles records to sort out their marijuana from stems and seeds and roll their joints. And then my sisters would be listening to James Taylor and Kris Kristofferson. And, you know, I got to hear the Ohio Players and Led Zeppelin and, you know, everything that was happening. And then I found Michael Jackson, kind of. That was my artist at the time. And I was able to sing like him. And my brother, I remember going like, damn, boy. Like, you know, he was way older than me. And just to think that an older sibling would take 1 second to give you one moment of something pleasant was that maybe was a pretty good sign.
So that's some positive reinforcement right there. Well, I mean, speaking of positive reinforcement, talk to me about winning a Grammy, the Grammy, because not only must have been cool, but, you know, you were handed it by Don Henley, and you two are in the front row, you know, that you beat, I think, twice. I think they were nominated twice for Best Rock Song. What did that feel like? I mean, just taking it to the opposite extreme, from your brother giving you notice, your older brother giving you notice, to having just the eyes of the musical world on you. How did that feel?
It was pretty surreal. You know, I was not a seasoned guy in how to be grateful on a stage. You know, like, I learned a lot of hard lessons about how to be grateful and why, but professionally grateful, that's hard to do. You know what I mean? Like, to be gracious on stage, you know, I'm not a guy that's gonna go up there and be like, you know, these awards are bullshit, bro. Like, I'm here just because I'm, you know, and that's just not who I've ever been. And I wanted to make sure that my mother got some props, because she probably wrote the thing. And I don't remember it. You know, it was just such a blowing, forceful, just a sketch of a moment that was so quick that I don't remember much about it, except for being backstage and having my picture taken, but knowing that the photographers were waiting for the next hot chick to come in. That was far more interesting than I was. So I just wanted to get the heck out of there.
It's all about those moments, I guess. I want to ask you, I read, do the best songs come quickly? The ones that you almost don't even have to work on, I guess, like Drops of Jupiter. Because I think I read that you said Hey Soul Sister came almost equally as fast. Is that usually a sign for you that those are the ones that just are almost delivered fully for them?
It does. They do have that in common. I'm not good at recognizing high quality things like that, or whatever the thing would be. I'm not good at recognizing songs that could potentially be hits. I'm the worst at it, and I'm not good at titling songs. Like, I called it Drops of Jupiter because it was such an interesting three words. Like, it was the most interesting three words in the whole composition. How do you call it, you know, tell me? Like, that's just not that interesting to me. But I was asked to change it to tell me over and over and over again until it was called Drops of Jupiter in parentheses, tell me. Anyway, I don't know why things come fast. Well, I guess they're just supposed to be there.
I mean, a song like Drops of Jupiter, too, I mean, it's so poetic and so specific, which I guess in a lot of cases it sometimes leads to misinterpretations because it's so specific. Are there any myths or mistakes that people have about it that you might want to clear up involving, I don't know, soy lattes or fried chicken or falling from a fallen star or something? Is there anything for the ages that you would like to clear up now about that song?
Yeah, those are all things. So I was definitely asked to get rid of soy lattes, 100%. Asked to get rid of fried chicken. It's fall for a shooting star and not from a shooting star, because the idea was, did you fall for somebody that looked like a better, you know, because I had to turn what was about my mother into a love song, you know, about maybe two young people. But and then the last thing, my favorite thing, is that people really thought I was saying, and that Van Halen is overrated. And so I got a lot of, this is early internet days. And so I got a lot of hate mail about, you know, you got a lot of nerve, bitch. Van Halen rules. You suck compared to Van Halen. I'm like, well, I don't even know why you're mad at me. What does this even mean? And then I found out that they thought I was saying
Wait,
Van
I've
Halen
never
is
heard
overrated.
That. Wow.
It's so funny. It's so funny because like Sammy Hagar and I have been friends for 15 years, and I used to golf with Eddie Van Halen, and it's just so cute that that was, I adore those guys. You know, I never met the other fellows, but I love that band.
What were they like to golf with? That's amazing.
He's just, you know, Eddie was such a quiet, mild-mannered guy, you know. He was, I don't know if that was in the second half of his life or if that's just, you know, who he was when I knew him. But he was just so sweet.
Man, I want to invite to one of your golf games. You've got a good crew going.
You're good. I'm kidding.
Don't try, yeah, trust me. You don't want me on.
My favorite guy to golf with in the whole world is George Lopez. He is he has a charity tournament every year. I hope he has it this year because it's my favorite thing to do in the whole world.
Oh man, is it later on in the year? I hope that happens.
And he's why I know Eddie Van Halen is because of George.
Whoa, how was that introduction?
I met George at a, I was on the George Lopez show with Hey Soul Sister the same day that Cheech and Chong were on. So that was a huge day for me because I love all three of those guys. And then I didn't see George for years and didn't realize that he was into golf. And I had just started to get into golf. So we were on this San Francisco golf / cooking show together, and then we just stayed friends and we're very close now.
Well, I hope that opens up soon. I hope touring opens up soon as well. I mean, I know that's got to be tough this last year, not being able to, for so many reasons, not being able to engage with your friends. What's filled that space for you? Have you been big on social media, just in keeping, you know, in contact with all the people that love you and your music?
You know, I mean, I think early on we did some TikTok stuff and tried to stay socially active. But honestly, Jordan, I think sometimes it's good for people to go away for a little while. And so I don't think it's a bad thing to be missed. I think it's endearing and adds. Here's the thing. It's a beautiful part of humanity if I can come back with an album that is worth a shit. Then I'm missed and it's worth the wait. Otherwise, you know, oh, we really missed you, and I just heard that new crappy song. You know, I'd rather it was like, man, we really missed you, and you're still my favorite band. This new album is just my favorite. That is what I live for.
How's the Zoom songwriting sessions been going? Has that been working for you? Are you more solitary? Do you like doing it on your own first?
I've been pretty bummed out about the Zoom writing until about a month ago. And then I was like, man, it's working out. It's working for me. I love it. I'm just good with it. Because it gets lonely. I'm like in my studio now and I like interacting with people. And you know, half the time we're together, we're just trying to make each other laugh. And then there's 15 minutes of work. So this way I just have to get to work more often, and that's not as fun, but I'm learning how to do it better and manage my loneliness, you know, and turning it into fuel.
Do you have a rough idea of when fans can expect a new album or EP or single, or is that's still a little further down the line?
I feel like it shouldn't be until after the summer. You know, I mean, we're planning on a big summer tour for 2022 in amphitheaters around the country and going into Europe and Australia. And, you know, I still haven't been to South Africa. I meet so many South Africans that are like, man, your music is just so big. And we've just never been there. I'd love to stop saying that. So I think that fall would make a lot of sense to have a first single, maybe put the album out in November, perhaps. And then by the time the concert tickets come for sale, you can buy the album and it all makes sense. And people start looking forward to that summer vibes because this is a summer vibes album for sure.
At the other end of the spectrum, I read that you were filming a movie based on, I believe, your Christmas album, Christmas in Tahoe. Do I have that right?
Yeah, they're gonna we're gonna shoot a movie for it. I still haven't seen the script, and I was hoping that I would see it by now because it'll be shot in Tahoe, obviously, and they still have snow. So I don't know how much longer they'll have snow, but I think snow is going to be an important part of the whole Christmas in Tahoe experience. But yeah, and then my friend Neil McDonough, who's an extraordinary actor who you've seen 100 times in 100 movies and was one of the really good bad guys in Yellowstone. He asked me to be in a movie. And so about 2 months ago, I went and shot. I'm in the first scene of a movie called Boone. So I'm excited to see that. Maybe that'll be the beginning of a, you know, maybe I'm the next Brad Pitt, Jordan. You never know.
I mean, hell yeah. I mean, is that something you really want to do more of?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if it was a specific thing. And, you know, I knew that acting is very difficult. Like, you have to really, really care a lot. It's like music where, you know, yeah, maybe you get lucky and have one song do well. But honestly, if you want to be good at it, you need to commit your life to it. So I don't know that I can commit my life to acting. And I don't know that I have the talent to be good at both things, but I wouldn't mind trying once in a while.
One of the things that's been keeping me sane during lockdown is watching a lot of movies. Have you been watching a lot?
Yeah, that's another thing that my friend Sydney Rice, I go, hey, Sydney, do you watch Netflix? And he said, I have watched Netflix, meaning he's watched everything.
He got to the end.
I have already watched Netflix. I feel like that. That's what I feel like. We just revisited the first Coming to America with my kids so that we could watch the second one. So we're
That's awesome. Oh my God. Yeah. No, I've been meaning to watch that. Doing a lot of like musical and TV comfort food. Like I just like watched all of The Wonder Years, which I haven't seen like since it came out, which was, yeah, strange.
Well, a long time coming, I have to watch A Night in Miami because Leslie Odom Jr. is a friend and he just was nominated for an Oscar today. So out of my respect for what a talent he is and the fact that I'm such a huge Sam Cooke fan, I have to see the movie. I don't know what's taking me so long.
Oh, it is excellent. Oh, especially if you're a Sam Cooke fan, you're going to love it.
Have you seen it?
So good. Yeah, it's really incredible. Well, my last question, we've been asking everyone this question. It's been really fascinating to hear everybody's very different answers. If you could snap your fingers and have everything go back to normal, whatever your definition of normal is, call it 2019, say, what would be the first thing that you would do? Places you'd go, people you'd hug, what would it be?
Well, my real honest answer is that my relationships, the closest relationships in my life have suffered a great deal because of COVID, because we've all thought of it in different ways. None of us being irresponsible, but some of us being scared. And that fear has really interrupted a lot of the great close love that we had. And I would want that back. And it's going to be some work to get that back because there's a lot of feelings that get hurt when there's not communicating about like, hey, Jordan, here's the way I'm going to behave. And you're like, okay, cool, Pat. I love that. And I'm going to behave like this. And we'll meet at the end. There's not that kind of communicating when it comes to most relationships. It's a lot of, well, that was bullshit. I can't believe that they did that without telling, you know, like whatever the thing is. But I would want the old version of those relationships back. That's my snap of the finger.
That is the most considerate answer we've had. And, you know, I mean, open communication, approaching things with love, I think you can't go wrong.
It seems like you can't, but you can. You'll find a way for it to go wrong. We're humans.
Yeah, we're humans and we expect it. We factor that in and we forgive. And there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yep. I think it's going to be good soon, man.
Pat, thank you so much for your time today and your music. It has meant so much to me over the years. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that, Jordan. Well, I have this recorded. I'll send it to you and a picture of me without my shirt on.
Just because.
I'm not sending that. Thank you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.